Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
Condolences and expressions of solidarity with Austria have poured in from Czech politicians following Monday's terrorist attack in Vienna. The Czech Republic has asked the World Health Organization to help secure doctors and nurses who would help out in Czech hospitals, where a growing number of medical staff have contracted the coronavirus infection. And the government has allowed professional sports competitions to resume in the country. Condolences and expressions of solidarity with Austria have come from Czech politicians across the board following Monday's terrorist attack in Vienna. The Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said he was horrified by the incident and expressed solidarity with the people of Austria and Chancellor Sebastian Kurz. Many put the attack in Vienna in context with a recent terrorist attack in Nice, saying that Europe must stand strong to protect its values and democracy. The Speaker of the Senate, Miloš Vystrčil, wrote on Twitter that while COVID-19 is a dangerous adversary, the terrorist attacks in Nice and Vienna are attacks on the very foundations of European civilization. Civic Democrat leader Petr Fiala said European countries must act to defend their values and protect their citizens against terror attacks such as this. The head of the Pirate Party, Ivan Bartoš, said it was essential to cut off fundamentalist imams in Europe from the finances that funded terror. Cooperation between national intelligence agencies is increasingly important in this respect, he said. Meanwhile, the Czech police launched random checks on the border with Austria on Monday following the attack. The checks were targeted at vehicles and passengers on border crossings with Austria and were described by police as a preventive measure. In addition, patrols were stepped up at major Jewish sites in the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic has asked the World Health Organization to help secure doctors and nurses who would help out in Czech hospitals, where a growing number of medical staff have contracted the coronavirus infection. Seven National Guard medics from Texas and Nebraska are already helping out in the Czech Republic, with a further 21 expected to arrive in the coming days. Germany has offered two of its military doctors and said it would be willing to take in up to 10 Czech patients from the border regions. The Chamber of Deputies recently approved up to 300 military medics from EU and NATO countries being allowed to operate on Czech territory for up to 90 days. According to the president of the Czech Medical Chamber, Milan Kubek, the number of infected doctors and nurses has now reached 16,000, up from 13,000 a week ago. Five doctors have died. The Czech government has allowed professional sports competitions to resume in the country, provided strict measures aimed at curbing the spread of COVID-19 are observed. From Wednesday, professional sports people will also be allowed to resume training indoors, which was prohibited by a government order on October 12th. The country's top football and ice hockey leagues have been advocating strongly for a resumption of their competitions. Games will continue to take place behind closed doors. Slovakia has announced that it will introduce compulsory COVID-19 tests on its borders as of next Monday. People entering the country will either have to produce a negative PCR test no older than 3 days or undergo testing at the respective border checkpoint. The number of open border crossings will be reduced in order to facilitate the process. It is not yet clear if people will have to pay for the tests themselves. The decision was made in reaction to the worsening epidemic in the country. Czech rail and bus carriers have asked the government for assistance after sustaining heavy losses due to the coronavirus crisis. The losses to Czech railways are expected to exceed 3 billion crowns this year, and private rail and bus carriers expect hundreds of million crowns in damages. In the spring, passenger numbers dropped to a tenth of the original demand, and train and bus connections are now filled to 25% capacity. Many intercity connections have been scrapped. According to the CTK news agency, the government is considering possible forms of support. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Wednesday should be partly cloudy to overcast, with day temperatures between 8 and 12 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Here's what's coming up in today's programme. The World Health Organization is ready to secure medical staff for Czech hospitals. A man discovers a rare Bronze Age sword while picking mushrooms. And later we speak to Danish historian Petr Bugge on his fascination with Czech culture and his memories of the Velvet Revolution. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Over the past few days, the COVID-19 epidemic in the Czech Republic has slightly slowed down. Nevertheless, hospitals around the country continue to struggle with a serious shortage of medical staff. The Ministry of Health is currently negotiating with the World Health Organization to help secure nurses and doctors to help out in the fight against COVID-19. And Ruth Frankova will tell you more about that story.
After a steep and continuous growth in new coronavirus cases in the past few weeks, there are now signs that the epidemic might have culminated. However, the number of Czech doctors and nurses who have contracted the coronavirus infection continues to grow. According to the president of the Czech Medical Chamber, Milan Kubek, 16,000 health employees are currently fighting the infection, compared to 13,000 last week.
What is worse, five doctors have already died in the Czech Republic. Last week, two of our colleagues passed away. One was a general practitioner from Prague and the other a pediatrician from the Pardubice region.
The Czech Ministry of Health has asked the World Health Organization for two emergency medical teams to be deployed in the country. The Deputy Health Minister Alexey Šedo says hospitals are mainly in need of nurses for intensive care units. It is not yet clear when the WHO medical teams will arrive, but according to the organization's representative in the Czech Republic, Dr. Srdan Matic, it could be within a matter of days.
I think it doesn't take very long to bring teams, especially because we will be primarily looking for staff to come from European countries. So I don't think we will have a lot of logistical problems with it. So it can be very quick. The situation in Czech Republic with, let's say, equipment, beds and supplies is very good in hospitals. In some of the countries where we had deployments before, the teams had to come with everything. In some cases, even with field hospitals, to be able to provide assistance, which I don't think will be the case in Czech Republic. It's, I think, about getting people here physically.
The WHO is not the only authority assisting the Czech Republic in its fight against COVID-19. Seven National Guard medics from Texas and Nebraska are already helping out in the country's hospitals, and a further 21 are expected to arrive in the coming days. Germany has offered two of its military doctors and said it would be willing to take in up to 10 Czech patients from the border regions. The Chamber of Deputies recently approved up to 300 military medics from EU and NATO countries being allowed to operate on Czech territory for up to 90 days. The Czech Republic has also received material help from its allies, such as lung ventilators, which have been sent by Germany, Austria and Hungary, as well as from the strategic reserves of the EU and NATO. Close to 7,500 people are currently hospitalized with COVID-19 in the Czech Republic, with over 1,000 of them in a serious condition.
And that was Ruth Frankova with that report. Now, a man on the search for mushrooms came across a 3,300-year-old sword from the Bronze Age. It is only the second sword of its type to be found in this country, and archaeologists say that they plan to dig in the surrounding area. Roman Novák was indulging in a typical Czech pastime in the Jesenicko district of northern Moravia when he came across a rare item. It had just rained and he went mushroom picking. As he went, he saw a piece of metal sticking out of the stones. He kicked it and later found out that it was a blade, a part of a sword. He came back and ended up digging up not only that, but also a bronze axe. Mr. Novák immediately contacted archaeologists who have since conducted several tests. These show that both the sword and axe date back to around 1300 BCE and resemble weapons used mainly in the area of what is today northern Germany.
The sword has an octagonal handle. It is only the second sword of its type to be found here.
To zatím druhý nález tady tohle z toho typu meče.
That was Jiří Juchelka, who leads the archaeology department at the nearby Silesian Museum. He and fellow experts say that they were surprised to find such a sword in the Jeseníčko area, because at the time it was sparsely populated. However, tests have shown that the soil was indeed local, so it should come from the area. He says that the sword would have been an expensive commodity in this part of Europe 3,300 years ago, when the Urnfield culture was just getting started in this region. Unlike with later iron swords, which required the smith to hammer the red-hot metal into shape, bronze swords were made by smelting bronze until it turned into liquid metal and then pouring it into a mould. The sword from Jeseníčko is not the best example of this method, however, says Mr. Juchelka.
They were obviously trying their best, but the quality of the casting was actually pretty low. X-ray tests show that there are many small bubbles inside the weapon. This suggests that the sword was not used in combat, but was instead of symbolic value.
Protože se pod tím rentgenem ukázalo neuvěřitelné množství bublinek.
His colleague, Milan Rychlý, who works at the Ethnographic Museum of Jeseníčko, says that an archaeological survey of the area where the sword was found will now follow.
It's like a puzzle. We just have four little shards from the story that took place right now, so we have to start piecing everything together.
In the meantime, the Silesian Museum, in collaboration with other institutions, has commissioned several expert analyses of the sword, after which the rare item is set to be exhibited in both the Ethnographic Museum of Jeseníčko and the Silesian Museum. Now, just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, where it's time for our main feature of the day, this time brought to you by Ruth Frankova.
Danish historian and translator Peter Bugge has played a significant role in promoting Czech language, literature and culture in his homeland. Among other things, he helped to create an independent Bohemian studies program at the University of Aarhus and translated works by Václav Havel and Karel Čapek into Danish. Last month, Peter Bugge received the Gratias Agit Award from the Czech Foreign Ministry for promoting the good name of the Czech Republic. I caught up with him on the occasion to discuss his ties to the Czech Republic, and I started by asking him about his impressions of Czechoslovakia when he first visited the country back in 1976.
I was fascinated by the country and slightly mystified. On the one hand, I noticed that at a certain level things were similar to Denmark. People were relatively accessible, easy to talk to the extent that they spoke English or some German. We visited both Prague, where I, of course, loved the architecture, the old town and the castle and so on, southern Bohemia. My father had a great interest in Jaroslav Hašek and wanted to follow Švejk's anabasis in southern Bohemia. We visited Slovakia. There we had a car at our disposal with a driver because my father worked in the Ministry of Transportation, and his Slovak colleagues obviously had access to cars with drivers, which to me was a complete oddity. That's not the normal standard for civil servants in Denmark, I can tell you, then or now. So there was this, on the one hand, a relatively familiar culture, and on the other hand, some strange phenomena that made me curious. This was called socialism, and yet I noticed hierarchies that we didn't have in Denmark. Of course, to some extent, you're always blind to your own implicit hierarchies, but still, this was a riddle to me and one that kept fascinating me.
So was it this riddle that you are talking about that actually triggered your interest in Czech history and later also Czech language?
Yes, it was. I started out in my university studies doing political science, and I was generally interested in Eastern Europe and Russia. Later, I found out that for me, doing political science was not enough. I wanted to dig deeper into history and language. I think you cannot understand a culture of a given country without access to the language. So I moved from political science to history and bohemistic, as we call it, the study of Czech language and literature and so on. So it was a general interest in Eastern Europe, in the world of communism. I also spent half a year in Moscow in the bad old days before Gorbachev. And then, as I was to specialize, this visit to Czechoslovakia resurfaced or made me give Czech a go. I more or less, by chance, decided to try to learn the Czech language in 1984, a decision I have not regretted.
I know you visited Czechoslovakia regularly before 1989, and you actually witnessed the first week of the Velvet Revolution. What are your memories of that event?
Of the Velvet Revolution, euphoria, joy. It would be unfair to call it carnivalesque because it also had a serious dimension, of course, and there were moments of anxiety where we didn't know if the people's militia would intervene and so on. But the overwhelming feeling was that of joy and fascination also with how disciplined people were in these circumstances. Attending those big manifestations at the Wenceslas Square was an overwhelming experience, seeing how they're standing at the balcony of Svobodné Slovo, of the newspaper house, speaking to the masses. One incident really stuck with me. Havel at some point saying, "The old men at the castle are afraid," and the crowds immediately began shouting, a bit like in football stadiums, "Bojte se, bojte se, be afraid, be afraid." And then Havel waved his hand and everyone was quiet and he said, "But they have nothing to fear because we are not like them." And then we immediately started shouting, "We are not like them, we are not like them." And this shift, 30 seconds from "be afraid" to "we are not like them," for me encapsulates this whole atmosphere of the first week of the Velvet Revolution. The ability to stage this, to organize this, it was evident that people wanted change and they wanted it peacefully. So I was actually quite sad to leave Czechoslovakia. My visa expired, so I had to return home to Denmark. And I did my utmost to come back as soon as possible, shortly after the New Year, to see how events unfolded.
So how did you perceive the changes the country went through in the years following the Velvet Revolution?
One of the things that I noticed very much at a personal level was that all of a sudden my friends no longer had time. In the communist years from 84 until 89, when I was also a frequent visitor to Czechoslovakia, studying Czech at the Charles University in Prague for half a year and then attending summer schools and visiting whenever I had enough money to go, people had time. People could basically leave their workplaces and go out, have a beer or a cup of coffee with me whenever I arrived because there was not all that much pressure on and there was relatively little to do otherwise. Now all of a sudden people had serious jobs. Things were faster. For most of my friends, the younger ones, the change was one of increased opportunity, professionally, career-wise, and so on and so forth.
You served as head of the Department of Slavic Studies at Aarhus University. Is there an interest among Danish students today in Slavic studies? And I'm asking because I know that the instruction of Czech was terminated at the university due to a lack of interest.
That is true and sadly so. We tried and it worked for a while to redesign the traditional Slavic philologies as language-based area studies. There really was no market for conventional philology and importantly for young people, nor were there any jobs afterwards. So we did area studies, and that worked reasonably well in the 90s, but I must say that in the last 10-15 years, the interest in the smaller Slavic languages and cultures has declined. We have seen the closing of Czech in all of Denmark. What we have left now in Denmark is, of course, Russian, which still remains, for obvious reasons, relevant and also big enough to attract a sufficient number of students. Copenhagen has Polish and Bosnian, Croatian, Serbian, and that's about it. To some extent, I think in the Czech case, it has to do with something positive. It is no longer exotic from a Danish perspective. No big political upheavals, no big drama. You have become a normal European country of a medium size, and these countries generally do not attract all that much attention from young Danes looking for things to study at a university.
What about Czech literature? Because apart from your research, you also work as a translator, and you translated, for instance, works by Václav Havel and Karel Čapek into Danish. So what is the awareness of Czech literature in Denmark today?
Modest. I don't think readers in Denmark have any sort of idea of trends in Czech literature as such. The interest was, I would say, bigger in the 1980s and 1990s, where authors like Kundera or Klima or Kohout were read also in that political context of dissidents and life behind the Iron Curtain and so on. I would say the last 15-20 years it has been rather scarce. I was happy to get a chance to do a new translation of War with the Newts, Valkas Mloki by Čapek. The old Danish translation was a bit outdated. And, of course, to do his travelogue, Cestana Severa, Travels in the North, which covers briefly but fascinatingly Denmark in the opening parts. Mostly, I would say it depends on whether a publisher, an individual publisher, comes across a Czech author. You cannot say that we follow or monitor Czech literature as such.
You recently translated Bianca Belová's The Lake. Is there any other Czech author from the younger generation whose work you would like to translate into Danish? Or are you actually working on any translation at the moment?
Right now, I do not have a contract on anything big, like a novel. I'm translating a few essays by Milena Jesenska for a small Danish journal specializing in art history. Again, the editor of that journal came across Jesenska more or less by chance and was fascinated by her writings. Jesenska has been translated into English. And he was so fascinated by her story, her style, and so on, that we agreed that I should do a few essays for publication in this art journal. If we talk contemporary authors, I would like to see Petra Soukupová, or perhaps Katarzyna Tučková or Alena Monsteinová translated into Danish. I will try to persuade some publishers. Everything has been a little bit quiet recently due to the corona situation, but the publisher who did publish The Lake by Belová would very much like to do other Czech literature, so I will talk to them about the names that I mentioned to you to see if we can agree on a contract and a plan.
You said there isn't much awareness of Czech literature in Denmark today. Would you say that there are any similarities between the Czech and Danish cultures? Would you say that Czechs and Danes have more in common than just beer?
Oh, yes. I think we have quite a lot in common, good things and sometimes also problematic things. In fact, what struck me when I started doing Czech was how familiar Czech culture seemed to me, how easily I adapted and fell at home in Prague or Brno or in Czech culture as such. I think it has to do in both cases with this self-perception that we are small nations and that we are middle-class or plebeian nations, nations without a strong, prominent nobility. which also gives us a sense of humor and irony and disrespect for anything grand and pompous. And we like beer, as you mentioned, in both cases. Czech beer is better, I would say. The other side of this is that both Danish and Czech culture can tend to become a little bit tribal, self-contained, smug, not very open to foreigners. That I find at times problematic. So I think for relatively small but politically and culturally and so on secure nations like ours, both Danes and Czechs, finding a balance between a legitimate pride or just joy in one's own culture and an openness towards the bigger world, that's the challenge.
And that was Danish historian Petr Bugge speaking to Ruth Frankova there. Mr. Bugge is this year's recipient of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs Gracias Agit Award. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or also on our Facebook and Twitter accounts. Just type in Radio Prague. We'll certainly be glad to hear from you. But that is all for now from me, Tom McEncrow, and I thank you very much for joining us and wish you a lovely week.